Hi, I'm Chris Cotnor, executive producer of the DSR Network. We've been incredibly busy here over the past month. With the launch of TNR's Daily Blast, we now produce 10 shows covering foreign policy, national security, domestic politics, cyber and tech, legal, and much more. We've also just launched our redesigned website at thedsrnetwork.com. With all this content, there has never been a better time to become a member. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack community. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. Earlier this week, New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham signed a handful of new gun control bills. The state has seen a terrible spate of gun violence that drew national attention, leading her to declare a state of public emergency that infuriated some gun rights activists. Lujan Grisham is in the middle of some important trends in our politics right now, such as the success of Democrats in border states, the transformation of the Southwest in a pro-democratic direction, and the rise of the female Democratic governor in the era of Donald Trump. So we invited the governor on the show to talk about all of this. Welcome, Governor.
Thank you very much for having me, Greg.
First, we have to ask about the retirement of Senator Kyrsten Sinema in neighboring Arizona. That's a tough state for Democrats. Can Congressman Ruben Gallego prevail there?
I think he can. You know, I think actually to some degree it's less complicated on the numbers, just pure politics, not substance. I have a relationship with both Kyrsten and Congressman Gallegos. I think not having a potential third party candidate here or, you know, a tough primary for either of them creates what I think we're going to be talking about is what does that general campaign look like? And given that a Democrat beat Carrie Lake, I think that we're going to see sort of a rematch of that. And what I think it says about the West, who conservative, fiercely independent, very diverse, is they don't want extremism. They want problem solvers. They want stability. And I think that's playing out in a number of ways, as you said so in the introduction, that we're seeing changes in politics in the West.
I do want to get to all that in a bit. Let's start by talking about your gun bills, though. Last fall, you signed an emergency order suspending the right to carry firearms in public, which got attacked by some MAGA Republicans, and you narrowed it after a court blocked parts of it. Then just this week, you signed bills that extended the waiting period for guns and barred firearms at polling places. I want to ask about that latter move, which seems particularly interesting at a time when threats to election workers are on the rise. Is that a big part of this?
Certainly not in the day-to-day violence that we're seeing play out in far too many communities in New Mexico. But if you're going to take measures and you're going to focus on, we all have a constitutional right to be safe at work and at our churches, grocery stores, movie theaters, and homes and neighborhoods, then I do think it's really valuable, which is why we have this piece of legislation that I signed into law yesterday. That says, look, we care about polling workers and we care about creating safe spaces for people to exercise their right and privilege to vote.
I do think that at a time of rising political violence, this sort of thing is particularly significant. In 2020, we saw huge numbers of threats directed at election workers and a lot of voter intimidation. I do think in the Trump era, especially, people really do instinctually seem to understand that there is a real threat to their ability to exercise their right to vote and peaceably assemble politically. Is that a concern going forward into 2024, do you expect threats to election workers and at polling places to be a serious issue?
Well, Greg, I hope not, but I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibilities. Just look at the Trump era, during and post COVID. Anyone making any policy decisions was at risk. Certainly, I was threatened. Any of our marches or protests were met with far too many individuals who were very angry, who were openly carrying automatic weapons and rifles. And that does not create an environment where people can, in fact, peacefully protest. That level of intimidation is purposeful. So while I say, gosh, I hope not, New Mexico is going to take every kind of precaution, including, you know, we've expanded voting by mail, all of the pieces that protect individuals, but also making it clear we're not going to tolerate that level of risk at our polling places. And I hope other states follow suit.
Let's talk about what's going on with Latino voters right now. The latest New York Times poll has President Biden trailing to Trump among those voters, and more broadly, there are indications of a shift towards Trump and Republicans. How serious a problem is this for Democrats, do you think?
You know, I'm going to reframe it, and I hope you don't mind that I do that. You know, paying attention to all of your voters is critical, and certainly I listen to the political commentary, and I read about it nationally as someone who is going to work very hard to get Biden reelected, that young people, Hispanic voters, largely male Hispanic voters, largely rural areas, and I think it speaks to two things, and so I don't see it as, you know, an emergency, rather I see it as we got to view it as an opportunity to get our voters back and to give them a reason to vote for Democrats again. And I think if we do that, I'm feeling more confident, but I don't take any of it for granted. With all of the nonsense playing out in Congress and at the national level, that doesn't relate to folks in rural America, it doesn't relate to folks along the border, it doesn't relate to folks in New Mexico, and they get really frustrated. And I will tell you, poor and particularly rural families, and then you add Hispanic families who are farmers and ranchers and work in the oil and gas field and have an incredible work ethic. They're working hard to feed their families. They'd like to see their elected leaders work that hard to deliver solutions. And I think that with the rhetoric on every other issue except the economy, Biden needs to lean in hard for his successes there. He needs to lean in hard on education. I will tell you, I got voters in record numbers, younger voters because of free college, but I had economic messaging work to do with Hispanic men, in particular in rural areas, because when you look at the job growth on the outside, it's easy to see it in the bigger cities. You don't always see it translate in the same ways in rural areas or often even in border areas. And I think that's where Biden in particular and his surrogates like me are going to have to make the case. And I think once we do that, they're going to reject Trumpism and they'll reject extremism. And I will tell you this, they don't like being implicated in racist conversations. And certainly the information or the threat to do massive deportation rings true about an extremism I believe Hispanic voters in large part can and will reject.
It sounds like, if I'm reading you correctly here, for Hispanic men, especially in rural and border areas, maybe there's a bit of a hangover from COVID restrictions and maybe an overly fond memory of the Trump economy. Is that stuff overshadowing for these Hispanic men the sense among them that they might be under some sort of threat from a Trump presidency, given the threat to undertake mass deportations? In other words, is the economic hangover overshadowing all that?
It might today. It's early. I mean, all we're seeing is really information about the current Republican primary. But I think, you know, the West, including some of my own relatives, who I'm very proud to mention, former Secretary of Interior and former congressman, I think he held that seat, the same seat I held, District 1, which is largely Albuquerque, the center of New Mexico, Manuel Lujan Jr., those kind of Republicans are in short supply at the national level. We need to remind folks that common sense, problem-solving Democrats are a lot more familiar to those Republicans that they believed in for the right reasons. And I think this is a place where it's not one or the other, but it's bridging good economy, fairness to families, equity, just truthfulness. And we're going to have to lean into that messaging with real results. And we need to start right now. I don't disagree about that. And sometimes I'll push back a little bit, which is so unfair because you're so easy and nice. But I think that we let sometimes some of the media drive it one way, and it doesn't leave room or space to be talking about the issues that can move voters.
Let's switch to the female Democratic governor. I think that's actually becoming kind of an archetype in our politics right now, especially in the Trump era. Female Democratic governors tend to get targeted by a certain type of MAGA fury. Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan got hammered by the MAGA right over COVID restrictions, but then she won re-election as a can-do, hands-on problem solver. In Arizona, it was assumed that Katie Hobbs would lose to Carrie Lake, because Lake was this high-octane, angry MAGA celebrity type, but Hobbs won a surprise in 2022 with a quiet, no-frills campaign. Can you talk about this kind of type of politician and what they're accomplishing? Is it an archetype now?
I hope so. I'm really proud of the increase in Democratic governors and, frankly, their footprint on a better America and a better future. You know, it used to be that you had to defend that, you know, focusing on family issues is good for the economy. And there was a sense that women were soft and really weren't going to manage to get a lot done. Well, the data is and shows continually that governors, women governors in particular, are building economies at greater paces. New Mexico fits into that model quite nicely, that our family issues are economic issues. So in New Mexico, free college, free daycare, free universal pre-K, leaning in to make sure that every New Mexican reads, not just at, but above grade average, which is something we haven't leaned into. You know, we've sort of gone around the edges and it hasn't worked out so well. And I'm feeling really bullish about what our future looks like. But number one for wage growth, businesses will tell you they need these things. They need affordable housing for workers to live in so they can continue to grow the economy. Female governors are bridging that divide faster and more effectively than many of our male counterparts. And I do think we are the architects of a new leadership future. And I'm not trying to beat my male counterparts, but equality in that design is effective. And it's a race to the top in that design.
A couple of questions about that. What is it about the female Democratic governor that seems to kind of attract this MAGA rage?
You mean they don't like sexism, Greg? Is that what we're saying? They're intimidated by that level of effort? I think that's part of it. This new Trumpism, you know, era is, I will tell you what to do. Men are in charge. Women should stay home. This sort of 1950s rhetoric is out there in a way that is very dangerous and incredibly sexist. Not that sexism was gone before Trump, but he's brought it back in spades. And I do think it infuriates particularly, but not solely, you know, white men who I think feel like they might be losing power and control. And I would agree that it is sort of a special response. I see it in my state with, you know, MAGA extremists, not with everyone else, but certainly there. And I can see that the risks are greater for me as I campaign or go out publicly. They are really angry, but I think it's intimidation and insecurity and a new world order, which I hate using that language, but we're talking about fascism and sexism, inequality, and I think it somehow makes some people feel better about themselves, and Trump plays into that, I think, very effectively, but it's incredibly dangerous.
Not a lot of Democrats, elected Democrats, use the term fascism. I'm for it.
You're for fascism, or you're
no,
for talking
I am.
About
it? I'm for using the term, but you got me there.
I was just trying to be clear. Yeah, look, I try not to actually use terms that are harsh and sort of disengage maybe a segment of viewers or listeners. But I think what's going on around the world is worse than troublesome. I don't want to sound like I'm such an alarmist that, you know, I can't see a path forward, because I can. I'm actually an optimist, but I'm happy to call out these risks for what they are. And Trump is using those efforts and those ideals in a dramatic and dangerous way in our country. And I think, frankly, you're seeing women call him out directly, because we've had to call sexism and inequality out over and over and over again. And maybe there is a sort of special recognition about what's really occurring. I'm not going to, after 50 years of fighting, Greg, I'm not going to give it up now for this extremism effort in this country and around the world.
That brings me to the border. Speaking of fascistic language, Trump is out there saying that migrants are poisoning the blood of our country, and using rhetoric that's arguably significantly worse than what he used in 2016. New Mexico is a border state, and immigration is obviously a hard issue for Democrats right now, but the way it plays in the Southwest is complicated, right? A bunch of Democrats won in 2022 against restrictionist candidates in the kind of MAGA mold who made the border central. Why did that happen? I mean, and is it harder now for Democrats than it was in 2022? How should Democrats talk about the issue?
Well, if I had a pat answer, we would already be talking about it in the way that I would propose. I think you said it quite fairly and accurately. It is very complicated. So people who are here in New Mexico, and New Mexico is even more complicated. I'm going to take a step back. This is a state where we don't use, it's changing, but we don't use term Latino, Latina. We're Hispanics, because we're from Europe, and that Spanish connection, frankly, even a French connection to the state, is much stronger than our friends at the border of Mexico and Central and South America, right? There's a whole different dynamic here. Now, that is shifting with changing populations. We are definitely a diverse, multicultural state. The same issues are expected to be addressed here, and Hispanics and Latinos both want that. For example, if I had to wait in line to come here, then other people should too. But they also recognize you can't get a visa anymore. They recognize that all of the drama about all the nefarious activity at the border, they recognize that more of that nefarious activity is organized crime at ports of entry. They would actually want a candidate not to poison the debate, and not to create fear and anger, which is racist, but to actually resolve some of the problems. And while I will tell you, there's plenty of disappointment in New Mexico about our inaction on the border. They want action. They're angrier today at Republicans' failure to pass immigration reform and to take in consideration both border security and fairness at the border.
It seems to me that Democrats from border states and southwestern states need to engage the issue in a way that other Democrats don't. And can I ask you this? So given that Trump is using the kind of language that I just brought up to you before, and vowing giant camps and mass removals of millions and all sorts of horrific things, couldn't Democrats be doing a better job of highlighting that and saying, we represent the middle ground, they're the crazy ones on this issue? And yet Democrats seem to run away from the issue instead of doing that. And I still don't understand why. It doesn't seem to help them.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you exactly on the running away. I do want to recognize that it certainly appears that way, and there's not enough of these conversations. And this may seem like a bit of a soft response, and I hope you'll forgive me, and so will your listeners, which is in a 20-second soundbite, it is really hard to sound as if you've got an answer to that. We do have set of issues. I mean, just dealing with massive migration is as complicated to talk about as public safety. It is not a homogenous, one-size-fits-all, single, simple approach. And that I think, frustrates far too many Americans. Because if you are, say, if you're in New York or Chicago, you want a simple, immediate answer that seems fair at its base. And nobody is open to hearing it's complicated and Congress has to do it. I will continue to work with the White House and the Biden campaign. I think Southwestern governors can show an impact in workforce development, in public safety and security, and in ways that are more meaningful that can sort of set the model in the same way. Not every state should or will embrace a public health order to deal with particular high cost, high stakes gun violence emergencies in their communities. But I think you'll see them talk about it in more of a public health context. And I think this way, it isn't a fight between extremism on either side of an issue, but it's more of a common sense approach. And honestly, you're going to have to give me a minute to think about how I can get that into maybe not 20 seconds, but 60 seconds. And that has been something I haven't done as well as I need to. And it's something that I think Democratic governors as a group can be better at. And this is something we're going to have to demonstrate right now.
It wouldn't hurt for Democrats to figure out what their 20-second answer to build the wall is. So I think that that's probably a good mission. And yet at the same time, the Democratic transformation of the Southwest is a real thing and an underappreciated story. In 2004, George W. Bush won your state, as well as the other three key Southwestern states, Arizona, Nevada, and Colorado. Yet Biden won all four in 2020, and now all eight senators from those states caucus with Democrats. Big picture here, what is this change? What happened?
I said it earlier, and I hope I don't sound like I'm being too redundant, but I do. I think people just want stability, right? They want predictability. They want the anxiety level to be turned down in their own households. And I think that the extremists in the Republican Party don't represent even the kind of common sense, get things done Republicans that were born out of the West, that were highly protective of individual freedoms and family freedoms. And now that's meant control by the Republican Party. You will only do and think what we say and do. And that, I believe, particularly in the West, has really moved moderate Republicans' independence and has fortified moderate Democrats, but also given room to more progressive-leaning Democrats to create a better ecosystem for Democratic leaders across the West.
It's fascinating that you say that, because if you look at Carrie Lake kind of aping Trump in attacking John McCain, that's exactly what you're talking about. The kind of new MAGA Republican, which is really kind of plugged into the far right national media and maybe even a kind of global far right movement, is really kind of distanced itself or disconnected itself from a certain type of Western Republican that was represented by McCain and others in his kind of mold. Isn't that right? I mean, that's what you're talking about here, right?
Yes, it is exactly what I'm talking about. And it's interesting to me still that, for example, you know, Nikki Haley in her presidential bid and campaign has really pointed out Trump is losing. Now we have to wait and see in this general election, but I'm going to do my part to prevent him from winning. But her point about, look what's happening, even in Congress, look what's happening at the local elections. It is being rejected, and thank goodness it is. But he has such a stranglehold on the Republican National Party that they are forgetting about the very voters I don't take for granted, and neither do other Democratic leaders in the West. And I do think that's a model for the rest of the country.
Well, that seems like a good place to leave it. Governor Lujan Grisham, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Greg. I appreciate it very much.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.